Good evening, NFL fans, and welcome to the NFL Recap Show. I'm shooting the sports-ish. This is Tom. I am alongside Teddy this evening. Teddy, how was your day of NFL in week two?
We've got another week down in the books, another week of some fans, some no fans, some artificial fans, and another week that the Panthers lost a game they should have won.
Oh, well, I truly understand what you're saying, and we'll go right into our official sponsor this week, as your team was not so good, and it's to be expected in my team. I wish everybody would quit and leave. So,
right.
Going to break down those NFL games for you this week, getting a little bit of odds later in the top five highlights. We're going to start off the show, Detroit Lions at Green Bay Packers. This was a game last week, if you listen to the show, I said to make this your master lock of the week. The Green Bay Packers were giving up 6 at the time. I said you could take them to 16. You could take them to 26. Final on this one, Detroit 21. Green Bay 42. The real telling story again, though, is that the Detroit Lions get off to a 14-3 lead, look like they're controlling the game, and then don't score another point until garbage time. Matt Stafford, 20 of 33, 244, 2 and a pick. You got Aaron, 18 of 30, 240, 2 TDs, no turnovers. But the big winner, Teddy, in this game was Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones, 18 carries, 168 and 2 on the ground. Aaron Jones, 4 receptions, 68 in the air for another touchdown. Teddy, Aaron Jones was probably the fantasy player of the week. Did he make the top five highlights?
He did make the top five highlights. So we had
just like that, Barry Sanders just quit the show. He left the show like he left the Lions.
He did. He's getting you to that rant early. But no, I'd say Aaron Jones is probably going to be the player of the week for fantasy football. I mean, the only other option might be Tyler Higbee putting up 3 touchdowns in the Rams game. But he just went off, you know, and like he couldn't do any wrong today. He had, like you said, 18 carries, 168, 2 touchdowns. He had a 75-yard touchdown run. He had a two-handed leaping catch against the sideline, which was the highlight of the week. Looking like almost an Odell catch, but he did use 2 hands. But, you know, we're not going to hold it against him. In a week that has been ravaged by injuries, we had one in this game. Devontae Adams went down, only had 3 for 36 this week. Aaron Jones picked up the slack, and he quite literally ran with it. When you're talking about this game, and as you mentioned with the first quarter, and like, you know, they getting off to a hot start, you know, scoring a touchdown, holding the Packers to a field goal, answering with a touchdown. Like, they were, the Lions were on fire. I think the momentum shifted. They gave up a touchdown, a 46-second drive.
They do that, especially and a half too, a lot.
Toward the end of the first quarter, and then, unfortunately, Matt Prater shanks a 57-yard field goal. All right, it's 57 yards, no big deal, right? But if you look at it, right coming out of the next quarter, very next drive off the missed field goal, touchdown. Lions, 3 and out. The Packers do punt, but then it's a pick six, right? And so then literally from the pick six, it's all downhill. It's all Packers the rest of the way, and it's all sadness for Lions fans 2 weeks in a row.
It's another Lions game where you have a total of 89 rushing yards. It's another game where you abandon the run in the second half and does nothing. And truly the fault of all of this is Matt Patricia. He's a terrible, terrible head coach. Matt now improving that record to 9-23-1 as a head coach. Mr. Patricia, you make $3 million a year as a head coach of the Detroit Football Lions. What are we doing here? Yes, this is a game I did not expect for you to win. I didn't. You got blown out. You were the first team in NFL history to lose 4 straight games after being up by double digits. The first ever. You now hold the record. This team. It's their 11th straight loss now. It's the most since they've held the record of 19 straight losses, which included an 0-16 season. Kelvin Johnson has left town and said, I'm too good for you. I'm done with your shit. I'm leaving. Barry left town. Barry said, I'm just retiring. It's not worth it. So you can march forward down the field with the Lions if you want to. Here's the bottom line. They go to Arizona next week. In the second master lock of the week we'll get into later, they are going to go get throttled again by Kyler Murray and the Arizona Cardinals next week. And if you're a Lions fan, you should hope for this. And then you should hope Michael Thomas is healthy when the Saints travel the Lions and Drew Brees drops 700 yards on your ass. Because maybe then the moo-moo-wearing, pencil-riding, rocket science that he is, Mr. Matthew Patricia, can go find another profession and this team can get another head coach. I feel bad for you fans out there. I do. Forward down the field, guys. Yeah, go Lions.
I've got to ask before we move on, Tom, just to kind of help make you wallow in your misery a little longer. As a Lions fan, like, what's the light at the end of the tunnel, right? Like, are you at this point? Are you hoping for?
Ready? I've got the tagline.
Is it Trevor Lawrence? Like, what are you hoping for?
It is hashtag pull the lever, take for Trevor.
Pull the lever, take for Trevor. I like it.
Write it down, flush the toilet on the Lions, and let's just move forward. Wish Matthew Stafford the best of luck wherever he plays next. Great dude. Not his fault. Deserves better. Let's move forward.
Fair enough.
Teddy, is there anything you want to touch on this game? No? Okay, sounds good. Moving on.
Sums it up.
In the next game of the week, that can only be described as, is Quinn as bad of a coach as Matt Patricia? We have the Atlanta Falcons visiting the Dallas Cowboys. The Atlanta Falcons owned the majority of this football game. Matt Ryan, 24 of 36, 4 TDs, 0 picks. Dak, 34, 47, 1 in the air. Big difference, though, Dak, 5 of 18 on the ground for 3. 4 touchdowns total each. In a game that was probably most reminiscent to 28-3, the Falcons decided, how in week 2 can we trend higher than losing 28-3? Teddy, tell me, during quarantine football, what we can do is the Atlanta Falcons to shit on our fans even worse than we previously did. Teddy, can you tell me about the second half of this football game? If you even want to call it a football game?
I mean, it's just so hard to believe. You know, just with everything that happened, it's almost like everything had to go the wrong way.
It was 28-3. Right? It had to go perfect. Each and every drive from 5 minutes in the third quarter had to go perfect for the Cowboys. And it virtually did.
It really did. Like so basically what happens is the Cowboys end up scoring, as you mentioned, on Dak Prescott's 1 yard run with a minute 49 left in the game. Right? Backing up slightly. Earlier that drive, when the drive started, right? The Falcons, you know, punted after a 2 minute drive. The Cowboys get the ball 2 minutes, 50 seconds left in the fourth quarter, down 39-30. Still at this point, right? And at this time, according to ESPN, the Falcons had a 99.9% chance of winning.
99.9! Teddy, the Falcons have done that one other time in their history. Do you know when that was?
I can't seem to remember. When would that have been?
It was a very special day, a special, maybe a Super Sunday. Good. Atlanta fans, I'd love to hear from you. What do you even say at this point?
Like, do you automatically fire everyone that was on the hands team, quote unquote hands team? It's like everyone forgot that they can touch the ball.
But let's go back though. Let's go back like 5 minutes in this game, okay? Forget the hands team. Let's look at some of these offensive play calls that Atlanta refused to run time off the clock when they could have. It's not to say the game would have been 100%. It wouldn't have happened. The comeback. All I'm saying is if you take a few extra seconds on some of these plays, maybe a jet sweep instead of a straight draw, maybe a few seconds to the right or the left, maybe the time circumstance doesn't go in Dallas's way. And again, as you mentioned, they needed that timing to go perfect. Dallas was the star, and they got their miracle today. And it's almost as if Dallas, and if you're Dallas fans, good for you. I don't know who is, but you're now 1-1. Like, that could have been an 0-2 America's football team, right?
Yeah.
And then what? Dax doesn't have a new deal. It's chaos in Dallas. I was all for it. I'll be honest. I wanted Andy Dalton to come in here and light it up for 20, you know, 230, two touchdowns in the air. Give me some controversy in Dallas.
Another part of this game, as you mentioned, with just how much they had aired out. Obviously, Dak threw for 450 yards. One of those was our, I think, number three highlight of the week, which was Amari Cooper's kind of running on a streak down the field, getting kind of an over-the-shoulder, almost one-handed grab, but it was a very, very nice reception. He finished with 6 for 100. It just kind of blows your mind that, you know, that the Falcons offense can be as dominant with Calvin Ridley getting 7 catches, 109 yards, 2 more touchdowns. That's 4 over 2 weeks.
But you're tremendous in your breakdown of the offense for the Falcons, okay? And they have been great. Like, Matt Ryan early on, like, damn, I wish I would have drafted him, right? He's put up numbers, right? Even in this game, he put up numbers. You know what else put up numbers? Did you mention Dax put up numbers? 468 yards against that Falcons defense. Good. That was him alone.
Yeah. That's not even the old Ezekiel Elliott.
Like, this Falcons defense today let up 570 yards. Cool. You're not going to win too many football games when you give up 570 yards. That being said, you were the first team ever to lose 20, up 20, and never had a turnover. Never been done before. You were the first team up 16 points, didn't have a turnover, and lost. Never been done before. Kudos to those Falcons and Quinn for really making sure we have things to talk about on this highlight show. Teddy, was there anything else you wanted to touch on this just miraculous victory for Dallas and really season-saving victory?
I agree. It definitely is. You know, obviously you have the Falcons coming out of this 0-2, and I almost think it's more of an issue for them because we're talking about how good the offense is. Sure. One name that we haven't mentioned either the last 2 weeks is Todd Gurley. He ran the ball 21 times a day for 61 yards, averaged 2.9 yards a carry.
Yep.
What? Like, what is happening?
Yep.
That he has 21 carries a game, or 21 carries a game, only comes out with 60 yards. His longest rush, 8 yards.
I look back at the Falcons, and I remember when they had the two-headed monster in the backfield, right? And I look back, and I'm like, all right, what did they do differently here? What was a big key to their success, I guess? I don't know if you have the stat in front of you of how many times Ryan targeted. I'm just curious how many times he targeted Todd Gurley in throws. But it doesn't seem like he's remotely involved in getting those receiving yards past the line of scrimmage anymore. I could be wrong. I'm not looking at it. I'm asking you, Teddy. Do you happen to have those?
I do. Well, I do for this week. It's a very easy number to give you because it's zero.
He had 0 targets for receptions.
Todd Gurley, unless he has a reception, he at least didn't have a catch. So he may have had targets, but he didn't come down with anything. But according to this, it doesn't even look like he had a target.
When the Falcons are rocking and rolling on offense, and it's not that they didn't drop, you know, a bunch of yards today. I'm just saying, though, there's going to be games where you're not going to have this yardage and you'll need Todd Gurley to do something. They're going to have to figure out how to get him the ball in space if he's not as breakable off the line as he used to be. Because you can't tell me Todd Gurley in space still can't get the job done past that line. And if he can't, then you shouldn't have signed him. Like, that's just the bottom line.
I agree. Obviously you have everything with his, you know, injuries and, you know, what he did for the Rams and everything. But it's very weird when you have someone that's talented that isn't getting anything. So, actually, yes, I can actually did pull it up. So, last week he had 5 targets receiving. Okay. Only had two receptions. Yeah. This week he did have zero targets.
Okay. So he caught a tip ball, basically, is what happened.
Basically.
You know, it's funny because I asked you that because I knew last week he was targeted a few times. Mm-hmm. But this week, from what I saw of the game, I didn't see one ball near him or him even just eye contact with Ryan. Like, it's non-existent. They're going to have to get that going if they continue to have to let up 30 points a game because they might need to score best of 50.
True.
Moving on to our next game of the week. It was a very – this game, to me, was one of those head-scratchers. We have the Denver Broncos visiting the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, the Broncos going into this game, they lost last week. Pittsburgh had won. Going into this game, we got Drew Luck, right? We're all excited to see Drew Luck going to the Steelers. No, we don't have – Drew Luck went 1-for-5 and then was replaced in this football game with Jeff Drextel, which – at this point, again, at this point, Denver was already down pretty big. He comes in and does an admirable job as a backup, if not a good job as a backup in Denver. Teddy, before we get in the final of this game and what Ben did, were you surprised what Denver was able to do against Pittsburgh?
Definitely. You know, so obviously this game, I had the Steelers favored. They're looking to battle for, you know, the AFC North title with the Ravens. But, you know, coming in, Drew Lock, it's basically a rebuilding year almost for Denver, right? They're seeing what they have in Lock. They drafted Jerry Jeudy. They have Cortland Sutton kind of growing. They picked up Melvin Gordon. You know, they're kind of in a almost like a rebuilding, rebranding year, right? And then Drew Lock, as you mentioned, goes 1-for-5. Gets knocked out of the game. Your old pal, Jeff Driscoll, coming in. He came in, I said, game over. Right, the Steelers defense is so good. It's
dude, he was like 1-for-880 on the Lions. Of course he said game over.
I said game over. I was like, I almost turned it off. I was like, the Steelers have this one in the bag. But the concern I now have for the Steelers from a 10-point win against the Giants last week on Monday Night Football, and we know how bad the Giants are, lost to the Bears today, to a now 5-point win at home, and obviously you don't have the crowd, but to a 5-point win at home against the Broncos, quarterbacked by Jeff Driscoll, they're playing down to their opponents.
Yeah.
And they're scraping by. And
does it concern you, Ben, 3 rushes, -2 yards?
So I believe if I can look it up quickly, I believe some of those came from kneeling the ball down at the end of the game. But I do think there is something to be said that, you know, with –
no, those were just rushing yards.
They were just rushing
yards. Yep, those were actual full carries up the middle. Yep.
Then, yes, that does concern me.
Well, it doesn't – it's not the negative yards, right? If the whole concept of Ben not running isn't working, it's my concern because it's not like you don't have the weapons. I wouldn't mind if I was a Pittsburgh fan seeing Juju getting an end around, getting a screen. You know, maybe even be lined up for a hot toss in the backfield every once in a great while. You've got to break up the monotony. And I think if you're the Steelers and you've traditionally played a very steak and potatoes offense, right? They've never really ciphered from that. I think you almost have to look at it right now. And I only say this because Ben is almost, and you could probably look up these stats based on your connection to Pittsburgh. I would say Ben's 40% higher in stat average at home than he is away. And again, this was a home game. And yes, Ben still put up 311 yards, but it was the 311 with the two TDs that would concern the 311, two TDs, and one pick that would concern me. Going against that Denver team and the way the game started, and then with their quarterback going out, it should have been a keep away. Like, I just don't see how this game wasn't 38-16, 38-17, because as you had mentioned, that's where I thought this was going. It did not.
So some bright spots, you know, not to be doom and gloom for the Steelers, although I would be on a little bit high alert. James Conner did get back into the run game, 16 carries, 106 yards, and a touchdown. So you like to see him kind of bounce back.
Yeah, look much better.
His very confusing week last week where he may have been hurt, he may have been yelling at coaches, who knows. Deontay Johnson, 8 for 92 and a touchdown. Chase Claypool, almost the kind of rookie highlight of the week with an 84-yard touchdown. He had 3 catches for 88 yards and a touchdown. Juju did fine. 7 catches for 48 yards. You know, nothing that's going to, like, blow up a stat sheet, obviously. But at the same time, he helped. You know, he's consistent. He had a really good reception where the ball tipped off a defender's hands. He dove for it and caught it, saving the, you know, from an interception. So I think that, you know, the Steelers team can be very good. My worry as they go to play Houston next week, well, host Houston next week, excuse me. My worry is they play down to their opponents, and you cannot do that with the Texans and in the 2 games they have with the Ravens coming up.
If they play down to the Texans next week, Deshaun's going to use his comeback tour starting against the Pittsburgh Steelers is what's going to happen. I can assure you of that. Let me ask you one question on this game.
Sure.
Is this person I'm going to mention a fake or for real? Noah Fant, tight end, once again for Denver, getting it done. Another touchdown, 4 receptions, 57 yards. Is he the real deal?
I think he has to be the real deal at this point. You know, between the shaky quarterback plays had, he went – like, the touchdown he caught was from Jeff Driskel.
Yep.
It wasn't from Drew Lock.
You know, sure was.
Drew Lock, yeah, and Drew Lock loves him. He's
yeah.
A lot of quarterbacks use their tight ends as safety nets. Noah Fant's a safety net, and he's probably their number two wide receiver or receiving option at this point, right? And so I think he's the real deal. I think defenses are going to have to start planning around him, and it's going to open up their receiving game, at least that's probably what they hope. But I would say, as a fantasy owner of Noah Fant, he is the real deal.
You know what's funny about Noah is in college, he wasn't even the number one tight end on the team. Mm-mm. No, that'd be TJ Hockelson from the Lions who didn't. Okay, well, moving on now. Chiefs and Chargers up next on the docket. In a game that – I didn't see happening at any point in life. We, the Chargers, just looked like absolute dread last week, right? Mm-hmm. And in the pregame warm-ups, we get an injury. Guess what that injury is? Starting quarterback, Los Angeles Chargers, and guess what? The rookie Justin Herbert from Oregon's going in, right? Justin does, I think, fantastic for not knowing he was starting until probably 13 minutes before the game started. It was 22-33 for 311, 1-1. 75.5 quarterback rating, but again, as a rookie in a first game that he wasn't expected to start. I thought he looked good. And then on the other side of that coin, what the hell is Kansas City doing? Letting a rookie who didn't know he was starting 13 minutes before the game do that to you. Patrick Mahomes, 27-47, 302, 2 TDs in the air, on the ground, 54 yards. Chiefs win in overtime, 23-20. And there was many times during that overtime game where it wasn't as if the Chargers didn't have a chance to win this game. Teddy, did this game come off to you as a shock? Because to me, when I saw that it was an overtime, putting on the big screen, I was like, there's no way.
Yes, I would kind of agree with you. I think this one might have been a shock to everybody that even participated in it. So I don't know if this is something that the team's just putting it out to, you know, putting out the rumor to make it seem, you know, that Justin did better, or to kind of, you know, explain to Rod not playing. I'm actually told or read that Justin Herbert found out, like, seconds before the kickoff.
Yeah.
Like, not even minutes. Like, it was like they lined up, oh, hey, by the way, you're going in. And he was like, okay. Literally led a touchdown drive, first drive of the game, right? And actually another kind of highlight we have for the week was Justin Herbert when they were, you know, very close to the red zone. I think they may have been on, like, the 4 or 5 yard line, roughly in there. They were on the 4 yard line. He rolled to the right trying to find a receiver in the corner. Couldn't find it. Juked, like, pump faked the defender, snuck it into the end zone. First career carry, I'm pretty sure, and first career touchdown for him. So, you know, and obviously we know what the Chiefs are, right? They go 3 drives, 4-play punt, 4-play punt, 4-play punt. So three and outs in their first 3 drives, and they finally score a touchdown. This game, obviously, when it comes to the Chiefs, you're this reigning Super Bowl champions. You have the reigning MVP. He did all this, you know, signed this deal. He's part owner of the Royals now. There's a lot happening. There's a lot of targets on your back. I'd be a little concerned with how this one went. There's no reason with where this Chargers team is that this game should have been nearly this close. I agree with you. I believe the line was 8.5 points before the game kicked off.
I'm sure it
jumped whenever Herbert ended up being the starting quarterback. Sorry
to cut you off here, right?
No, you're good.
When we talked about this game, if I'm a Chiefs fan, I don't want Patrick Mahomes in that pocket throwing the ball 47 times versus the Los Angeles Chargers. That is a risk that is not worth it to me. What happens if Bosa blows him up on an end at one point, right? I didn't like that. But again, you have to like it if you win, but I didn't expect they'd be in that position per se.
I think looking at the ground game is very interesting for this game, mainly from the Chargers side. They ran the ball 44 times.
Yeah.
Right? Austin Ekeler, 16 for 93. Joshua Kelly, their backup, 23 carries for 64. Right? They were ground and pound the ball today. And then on the other side, we mentioned last week with the first game of the season being the Chiefs and the Texans, that Patrick Mahomes didn't run the ball once. This game, he saved the Chiefs based on his runs. He had a run in the fourth quarter setting up their game-tying field goal. That was, I believe, about a 21-yard run that they just covered everybody else but him. And he put him on the ground. He only had 6 carries for 54 yards, but still, every run that he chose was a veteran move, even though he's in year, what, three or four now? Four, I think. Then he's, you know, made a great play there. But at the same time, like, it was just weird that it came down to him almost, right? Like, it was like the defense was so good that they barely won because they have Mahomes as a quarterback. Anybody else, I think the Chiefs lose this game.
Sure. I would agree. I mean, I think I will give him credit for that as well. Looking at that game, right, and going back to it now, do you think there's any specialness to the Chargers? Like, do you think they can put something together here?
So, I've always I'm honest with people and tell them I'm biased with whatever teams appear on Hard Knocks and me kind of falling in love with their team, you know, as you kind of get the behind the scenes aspects. But, like, it was interesting that right after this game, after the OT victory for the Chiefs, Anthony Lynn, the coach of the Chargers, came out and said, if Tirade is 100%, he is our starter. That surprised me. I feel like Justin Herbert played well enough in his debut, like unexpected debut.
Against the defending Super Bowl champions. Yeah, I'd probably give him another look next week.
Yeah, but you're going to go back to Tyrod Taylor? Like, okay. But it was very interesting. Actually, I don't know if he actually caught the very, very end of this game when the Chiefs did win. It was kind of funny. Harrison Butker hit like a 53-yard kick to win the game. False start on the offense. Backed him up 5 yards. He had a 58-yard kick to win the game. The Chargers called a timeout right before he kicked it. And then he kicked a 58-yard kick again to win it. So he definitely earned the victory there. But for me, if I'm the Chargers, you know, kind of switching back, like, I would roll Justin Herbert. You know, just see what you got.
Let me make it worse for you than that. You have the Carolina Panthers visiting the Chargers next week. If there is not a tailor-made game to start Justin, I don't know what would be.
It hurts so much because they're my team. But
do you understand, though, what I'm saying? Like, you look at that line because you can't do it. They're at the Bucs the following week. Yes, the Bucs secondary is terrible, right? But you don't want him in a shootout with Brady as a rookie. Right. Then you're at the Saints. You want no part of that. Mm-hmm. You got the Jets. You're at Miami. And then later on in the season, obviously, it's much easier for them. I don't know. I'd probably roll it out next week if I was them.
I agree. And obviously, we need to kind of hear from injury report, whatever it might have been with Tyrod Taylor, like what happened, because it always know at this point that it was chest pains. So that could be obviously a number of things. But for me, if I'm Anthony Lynn, I'm looking at the tape. As you mentioned, with the Panthers coming to town, it's a great time to kind of fire up Herbert, see what you got.
Sure. What's unique this week is our other game of the week is still in progress right now. And the reason why we say this is we were discussing before the show. This game keeps going back and forth. It's getting to the point now where it's almost a shootout. We have the New England Patriots and the Seattle Seahawks. We are bringing to you this at 8:40 left in the fourth quarter. Patriots 23, Seattle Seahawks 28. Cam in the air, 22 of 32 for 273, 1-1. Cam on the ground, 22 and a touchdown. Big difference in this game, Russell Wilson in the air, 17 of 21, 234, 4 TDs, 1 interception. The Seattle running backs have not gotten it done in this game. Chris Carson did not look like he did last week. He only has 55 yards right now towards the end of the fourth. No TDs. Russell even has 39 on the ground. That being said, New England has no resemblance of a running game right now at all. If you want to talk about runners who aren't named, Cam Newton, New England has 20 yards of rushes right now. Teddy, what were some highlights for you in the first half? I know you got to check out.
Yeah, so we kind of – this game jumped right into it, right? So, obviously, third play of the game, Russell Wilson's trying to hit Greg Olsen on an out route, goes off Greg Olsen's hands, you know, because it's not from Cam, and ended up getting taken back for a touchdown, right? Right after that, the Seahawks have a 13-play drive, go 75 yards, whole distance of the field, get a touchdown. There's a lot of back and forth right from the beginning. And it's very interesting because, obviously, there was a lot of hype coming from New England after last week's win, right? Cam went off 15 rushes, 75 yards, 2 touchdowns. He was having fun. He looked good. He was running well. He was also playing the Dolphins. He was playing the Dolphins defense. The Seattle Seahawks have a much better defense, although one of their players, one of their safeties, did get ejected from the game on a helmet-to-helmet hit. But – as you can see from kind of everything going on in like the stats and how everything's going, Cam threw a pick that was intended for Damir Bird. He's not having the same success that he had against Miami, right? So it almost like, as you mentioned, 7 carries for 22, he had 15 for 75 last week.
I'll say this. I gave New England no shot in this game. If I'm being honest with you, I had Seattle covering. They've shown me a lot of moxie in the first half. What scares me is they've also shown me what that team has lacked now for 2 to 3 years. They don't have the receivers they need. And if they do, they aren't at the point where they need them to be. If N'Keal Harry is going to be the guy, he needs to step it up this year. He needs to move into that number two role. There's no reason you draft him where you did. He's your number four now. Like, that, there has to be an improvement. How many times is Julian Edelman going to be walking after games, catching 10, 11 balls for 115 yards? It's not going to last too much longer. But again, I didn't give them a shot, so I think Cam's played really well in this game.
Yeah. I mean, he's so, as you mentioned with Julian Edelman, you kind of hit the nail on the head. 5 catches for 116 at this point, as you mentioned, with about 8 and some change left in the game. It's a really back-and-forth game. There's a lot happening here. Obviously, Cam on the new team, still trying to make it relevant. He had actually a pretty big rivalry with Seattle when he was in Carolina. I feel like we play the Seahawks every year for better or worse. And obviously, with Greg Olsen going to the Seahawks now, there's that kind of there. There actually one kind of highlight from this one was actually the play of Stephon Gilmore, you know, cornerback for the Patriots. He actually hasn't looked that great this game. You know, he's still, you know, you have to know where he is at all times. He does have 2 tackles, you know, and I'm sure he is a presence even if he's not on the stat sheet. But Russell Wilson, as, you know, heralded by Chris Collinsworth as the best deep ball passer in the NFL. Dropped a honestly beautiful pass to, DK Metcalf. I was going to say DJ Chark, different team we're going to talk about. But DK Metcalf in the end zone where Gilmore barely just got his legs and barely got a hand up. It was a beautiful pass, beautiful catch. But I'm surprised at how well the receivers are doing for the Seahawks this game because they're usually very run heavy. And it's kind of scary when the Seahawks are able to adapt to their game plan. Obviously, it didn't work great against Atlanta last week. But, no, sorry, it did work really well against Atlanta last week. And so this team being able to adapt as something more than a run-heavy team is going to be something to kind of deal with.
Sure. When I look at that team, as you had mentioned, I think they can get it done a lot of ways, and I think they're very versatile. And again, it's why I have them, they have to be top of odds for me, like top four or five teams, not necessarily number one. But moving into odds, you've got some spreads and some odds for next week. Teddy, you ready to go to Vegas? You ready to do this?
After Minnesota's performance this week, I thought they were almost a kind of a lock junior to cover against the Colts, and I could not have been more wrong. So take what I say with a grain of salt. let's get into it.
So again, as we mentioned last week's master lock of the week was the Green Bay Packers. Is not only did they cover, they had won by 21 points, not 21 and a half, thank you, Lions, but 21. So if you took that alternative odd and you took the Packers minus 21 and a half, you almost paid your mortgage. Almost. Next week, we're going to start off. We have Las Vegas visiting New England. Opening line, New England favored by 6.5. Daddy?
Ooh, this one's tough because the old Las Vegas Raiders still have yet to play. They play tomorrow night in the Monday night game against the Saints.
Correct.
Where I'm assuming they're going to get smoked. But going off what we know from when they played the Panthers, as we've kind of drugged the Panthers, not as deeply as the Lions, but you said it was a 6-point line in favor of the Patriots, correct?
That is correct.
Depending on how this one shakes out, I actually might take Vegas if I'm feeling saucy. I feel like you're going to disagree with me, which is fine. But depending on what we see tonight and what we see tomorrow from the Raiders, what we see tonight from the remaining 6 minutes of this game with the Patriots and what we see with the Raiders tomorrow, I might actually like the Raiders in that one.
Okay. I like New England. I think they lose tonight. I don't see them losing two in a row right now. I'll take New England. Next up, we have the Rams visiting the Bills. The Bills laying 3 points. After what the Rams did today and what the Bills did today, Bills minus 3. Who do you like?
I kind of want to go with this. So are the Rams, the Bills are at home, correct?
Bills are at home. Breaking Bills tables. Yep.
Everybody's still jumping through.
Jumping through the tables. Okay.
I don't know. I still kind of want to take the Rams.
I'm taking the Rams. I'll take the 3 points. I don't care what Buffalo is doing. You're giving me points against Buffalo, and it's the Rams. Fine.
Works for me.
Houston at Pittsburgh. Opening line. Pittsburgh minus 6. Teddy, you talked about this game earlier. We got in depth about it a little bit going into next week. Minus 6 is the line.
This one scares me. So there was something about that popped up during the Texans-Ravens game trying to kind of give Bill O'Brien some leeway with how the season's going so far. That, like, no team since X year has started out with a harder first, you know, beginning of their schedule, whatever.
Don't give him any excuses. You traded DeAndre Hopkins. Can we stop?
For a washing machine. Yeah,
you traded DeAndre Hopkins, who may end up being the single reason the Arizona Cardinals make it as far as they do in the playoffs.
There you go. Anyway, so from that, I don't know.
You got Houston covering or not? You got Pittsburgh covering, not covering here.
I'm going with Houston. From what I've seen, I think they're going to play. I think the Steelers are going to play down. I think Houston's going to surprise them.
Give me Houston straight up. I don't even need the 6 points. It's going to be the week that bites Pittsburgh in the ass. It's going to be the week that Houston goes, we can't go 0-3. Too many things are lining up that way.
Yeah.
We have the San Francisco Giants, who may or may not have Jimmy G, versus the New York Giants, which do not have Saquon Barkley. San Francisco opening line was 6.5, already down to 4. Telling you who people are betting on. Telling you their faith in not having Jimmy G on San Fran. Teddy, Who do you like?
I can't believe you don't have the faith in Nick Mullins. Yeah, honestly, this one's going to come down to the injury report. I'm going against the 49ers for right now.
Cool. I don't like the Giants. I don't like them without a running back. I don't like them even more now. I'll lay the current 4 points, and I'll take San Fran in what may be a 13-3 ball game.
And breaking news, Russell Wilson has just thrown his 5th touchdown of the night. So now it with 4.5 left in the game, it is 35-23 Seahawks. Chris Carson had a receiving catch.
Mr. Wilson now becomes the number one player in fantasy for the weekend with his 6 touchdowns, 5-1.
There you go.
Up next, we have a pick'em. We have a pick'em. We have the Tennessee Titans visiting the Minnesota Vikings. Minnesota, who looked like absolute T-R-A-S-H, trash this weekend. Tennessee coming in, who honestly didn't look all that much better. But it's a pick'em. Who do you like?
I mean, you kind of have to go with Tennessee, right?
Yep, give me Tennessee too. Let's move on. That go. Minnesota team looked absolutely atrocious. Washington visiting the mean streets of the Cleveland Browns. Browns favored by 6.
I like what I've seen more out of Washington. They're a second half team, but I think Washington pulls together before the Browns do.
I don't trust anything in Ohio, and I trust it less giving up 6 points. Give me Washington plus 6. Moving to the other team in Ohio that I also don't trust, we have the Cincinnati Bengals visiting the Philadelphia Eagles. Philadelphia opened as a 4.5-point favorite. They're now a 6.5-point favorite. Teddy, any reason they shouldn't be a 6.5-point favorite going into this game?
No, as much hope as I think that there is around Joe Burrow and what he's doing for the Bengals, when you have A.J. Green get 13 targets and only 3 catches, it's really hard to back that team. I'm going Eagles.
I hate this game. I hate the spread even worse. The Eagles have looked like just a dumpster fire, not during whole games, but through periods of both their games now. I don't trust them. Give me Burrows. Give me the 6. Who knows? Chicago is going to visit Hotlanta. The Fighting Mitchell Trubisky's versus We Blow Leeds Falcons. Teddy, who you got? Falcons lane 3.
Week 3 is shaping up to be so terrible in so many games.
Sure is. It's only going to get worse. You wait until the next couple. Woo, baby!
You have to go with the Falcons. Like, they can't get worse than they did in the second half today. Right? Right?
I'm going to stop you right there. They can't. Chicago's going to show their ass. Give me Atlanta. Give me Atlanta minus 13. Who cares about the 3? You disagree? You got Atlanta too?
Yeah, I'm going to Atlanta.
In the other pillow fight of the weekend, the New York Jets, Jets, visit the Indianapolis Colts.
See, this is where I thought you were going to go with your T-R-A-S-H.
No, Colts laying 9.5 points.
Wow. Okay, that's a lot. I'm still taking it, though. Like, it's...
Oh, you're taking every bit of it.
Like, I'm taking like, it oh so my. Much.
Let me tell you about another game I don't like. Guys, if you're listening, don't touch this game with that spread.
No,
not at all. We have Carolina visiting the Los Angeles Chargers. Chargers minus 6.5.
The games are so bad.
Minus 65.5 right now. Please stop the madness. This has to be close to one of the locks of the week, right?
If there's no Christian McCaffrey, we haven't gotten anything about his injury designation.
He's not playing.
I feel like he won't with his ankle. There's no reason to rush him back. But just keep an eye on that. But for now,
Chargers. If I'm Carolina, and I'm not because I don't make half the decisions they have the last 3 years. But if I am them, Christian, listen, buddy. Go home. Go enjoy the wife. Go enjoy the TV, right? What's that? But it's not broke, coach? No, it's broke. You're out 8-12. Go enjoy the wife. We ain't winning shit this year.
Yep.
I would not risk him getting a severe injury at all. I agree with you. I take the Chargers. In the master lock of the week, the Detroit Lions visiting the fighting Kyler Murrays of the Arizona Cardinals. DeAndre Hopkins may go off for 230 and 7 touchdowns. How in God's green earth is this game only a 3.5-point spread? Take my money. Take it all. Arizona covers. Arizona covers a lot. If you want to double down, take the over 2. It's at 51. Hell with it. Kyler Murray might throw up 7 touchdowns next week. Teddy, what do you got?
Next. That's easy. They got nothing else to add.
Easiest line of the week right there. I don't know why the Lions are getting respect from Vegas, but apparently they are.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, we visit the Tampa Bay Toms going to Denver. Tampa Bay Toms minus 3.5 points in Denver. Teddy, I'm going to go with myself first. I'm going to take the Tampa Bay Toms. I'll lay the 3.5 versus Denver, but it ain't going to be easy. Teddy?
Yeah, I'm going to take the Buccaneers in this one as well. But this is another team that's kind of in my almost a hot seat for, like, what are we doing this year? Because I feel like both of their games so far this season underperformed. Like, they haven't reached their potential. And I don't know when they're going to or if they're going to.
Doesn't help me. Now, haven't had the preseason, Teddy.
Right. But, you know, with assuming it's going to be the Jeff Driscolls in Denver, I'm going Tampa Bay for now.
We have the Dallas Cowboys. We just spanked Atlanta up and down the field across their ass going to Seattle. Seattle laying 4.5, which I'm not going to lie, if they finish off New England, it's probably going to go up to 8. At 4.5, Dallas going to Seattle. We're all in on Seattle, right, at 4.5?
I'm going to agree. I'll take Seattle.
I think the letdown for Dallas is going to kick in next week, and I think Russell Wilson may own them.
That very well may happen.
Green Bay Packers visiting New Orleans Saints. New Orleans Saints laying 3.5 points versus those Packers. Let me tell you something, Teddy. I saw those Packers firsthand today. They are not very good. They should have won that game by 75 points. They let the Lions put up double digits in the first half. Give me New Orleans. Give me New Orleans real high. I love the play right here.
Does Michael Thomas sitting?
No, he's sitting. He's not okay. Playing.
Fair enough.
And it doesn't.
I'm rolling the dice. I'm gonna go Green Bay.
Ew.
We gotta fight somewhere.
You think they're gonna ride some momentum out here?
I think they will. You know, I think it's going to depend on if Devontae Adams is back or not, because I don't know if I trust the rest of the receiving core. But, I mean, it's hard to bet against Aaron Rodgers. I feel like he's going to end up being like Michael Jordan, that documentary where you piss him off personally, and then he just goes off for 5 touchdowns.
Yeah. And in what will be the game of the weekend, Monday Night Football, WWE Raw, bend over and just take it. Kansas City Chiefs visiting the Baltimore Ravens. This may do 21 million viewers. Baltimore laying 2.5 at home versus Kansas City. Teddy?
From what we saw today, give me Baltimore.
Give me Baltimore. Lay the 2.5. Lay 3. Lay 4. I'll take it all the way to 5.5 at this point. Somebody's going to have to prove to me that Baltimore isn't the best team in the league now after that Kansas City game to me. And it's going to be next week, but it's not going to happen at all this year. I'll take Baltimore.
I like it.
Teddy, after 2 weeks of NFL football, give me your biggest shocker of the season. Whether that is a winning team, whether it's a terrible team, whether it's a rookie, like what really is hitting you the most now? 2 weeks in, almost done.
That's a really good question. And actually what I'm going to go with might be a little bit of a different answer. It's going to be the play of Kyler Murray.
No, it's great. It's a great answer.
It's people were, especially from a fantasy football perspective, were expecting him to make a very large jump year two. But when we actually watch it in game, I don't think we were expecting the jump that he's made.
From a Kyler Murray owner standpoint in fantasy dynasty league, I don't understand that jump. Because towards the end of the year, he was dropping numbers. Like,
that's true.
If you had Kyler Murray last year, he's probably only gone up point-wise 20%. I say only, and that's still a lot of points. But you knew it was happening. Where I will agree with you, and I'll let you take it back over, I don't think it was people thought it was going to happen this quickly. I think they thought it would have been like mid-season, get in form with Hopkins, get some chemistry. But no, it's been game one. You want to get back into what you think about Kyler? Because I'm telling you what, Kyler's going to be on MVP ballots coming into the year.
Oh, yeah. Like you mentioned here, obviously DeAndre Hopkins coming to town drastically increases your receivers on any team, but obviously the Cardinals. But kind of pairing that with no preseason and your running back being Kenyon Drake, like he's doing so well. He had 8 rushes today for 67 yards, 2 touchdowns. One was a 14-yard touchdown. The second one was one of our highlights this week, was a 21-yard rush where he kind of ran out the middle, ran to the left, and then snatched some ankles at the goal line, running back into the end zone.
Like, let me cut you off for a second, Ted. So, fantastic. I think it's important to note, and that's why I'm cutting you off, that he looked fantastic. Last year, Kyler wouldn't have that confidence to scramble 30-plus yards, right?
Right.
He's quickly gaining that confidence of, well, I'm still a running quarterback. I'm going to tuck it and go if you're not going to cover me. I think it's super dangerous, and I think it opens up the Cardinals to a whole new set of plays once he's completely capable and comfortable with that book. You said Kyler Murray. I wasn't going to go with Kyler per se. I was going to go with the injuries. This week was a representation of full camps and full preseason. I don't want to guess a number because I feel bad for each and every single person who was hurt today. I don't know if I've ever seen more season-ending or long-term injuries in one weekend than I did today.
Nope. Brutal.
And again, it's hard. You don't have the normal everything you're used to, and I get it. To the guys out there, though, take care of yourself. Be safe, right? Careers in the NFL don't last long. The shelf life is not long. Take care of your bodies out there. As we mentioned earlier, with Christian McCaffrey, don't rush yourself back. It's not worth it. Teddy, week 3, anything that we mentioned that you want to touch on for week 3?
The only thing that I'm going to have, at least just going forward right now, is probably the most intriguing thing to me week to week right now, which I've never thought I would say this, is the Jacksonville Jaguars. And the reason is, we thought they were rebuilding. We thought it was going to be a dumpster fire. They had let Nick Foles go. They were going with Minshew Mania. Fournette's gone. They have James Robinson, undrafted free agent. They have a formula for not wanting to win. And they lost to the defending AFC champions by 3. Not AFC champions. Sorry. AFC runner-ups by 3. I've been shocked, even though they're 1-1 going into week 3. I've been shocked for how well the Jags have played, and I'm kind of thinking they're better than we all think they are.
Do you think the Jags are closer to being coached to a 6-10 team, or do you think the Jags are closer to have the talent of a 2-14 team?
That is probably a very good way to put it. I'd say they're definitely more coached to being a 6-10 team.
They are overcoached like I haven't seen. And again, I'm from Detroit. We don't see overcoaching here. We don't get the best of our players. They just quit and leave. Thank you, everyone, for joining us this week on the NFL recap on Shooting the Sports-ish. Be sure to please click like and subscribe below. For myself, Tom, that is Teddy. We will check you guys next week for the awesome slate of NFL games. Talk to you soon.